Blog Talk Radio.
Council of Elders call-in talk show. My name is Jansen Brooks, and today is my birthday, October 30th. Today is October 30th, 2021, and 68 years ago, I came into the world at around 10 o'clock at night. And I want to thank everybody for your cards, emails, texts, and well wishes. I really appreciate it. Well, today we have a great show. My friend Ron Gilmore, pension consultant, is on today. But let me just give a little bit of insight into the Council of Elders. The Council of Elders is an ancient concept whereby elders in the community will communicate with, teach, learn from, and guide younger members of the community so that they can avoid some of the pitfalls that elders have encountered. So with that, let me just say I want to thank everybody for calling in last week. As you know, if you called in, you know that we had a crash on the broadcast. I tried to broadcast from my computer rather than my cell phone. And it didn't work out. So back on the cell phone today. It's a funny thing that broadcasting from my computer worked when I tested it the day before, but on the day of the show, there was a lot of breakups. So I apologize for that. But life goes on. All right. Well, today I'd like to introduce our guest. His name is Ron Gilmore. He's a pension consultant. He is a man of God. He's a minister. He's a husband, a father, a grandfather, and also he likes to go fishing. So, Ron, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks. Certainly appreciate it, and certainly happy birthday to you.
Thank you, thank you, and thank you for your text to me today.
Yes.
Yeah, so Ron, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background before we get into our main topic today is going to be annuities, and you're going to be telling the folks about that and taking the mystery out of it. But just a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that opportunity. I certainly love the Lord. I am a man of God. I am a father, a husband, as it was all said previously. And I have been in the industry, since we're speaking on this, for 25 years or more. And first and foremost, I'm an insurance agent. That's what I am. But I do focus in the area of pension consultation with individuals and, of course, life insurance. But I appreciate the opportunity to be here, like I was saying, and appreciate the opportunity that has been given to speak to a number of people here today. I wanted to ask if it's okay if I just say a prayer before I get started, and then we can talk a little further about me and
yes,
what we're talking
right
about
here.
Thank you. Father God, we just
go
praise
right
you and thank you for this day you've given us, Lord God. We thank you for the peace through Jesus Christ that you have given us in our hearts, Lord God. And we just appreciate this moment we have to share with so many people, Lord God. And certainly we believe that this is the day you've made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. And this is the day that you brought Brother Brooks into the world. And we certainly pray for him. Thank you for his person. Thank you, Lord God, for his character. And we just pray for him that he would have a healthy and wealthy life, Lord God, spiritually, in Jesus' name. So thank you, Lord. Well, can get started here, yeah. I just wanted to say also, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, you go ahead.
Oh, okay, I was just going to say that certainly this industry is a lot of fun, and there's a lot going on in this day and age in regards to pension plans and individuals who are seeking to accumulate monies. And the pension plans are few and far between today. They're not as available as they were 10, 15, 20 years ago, where everybody had a pension. Today, the onus is on us as the individual to put monies away to make sure that we have something in the future. Just wanted to add that piece.
Oh, okay. Since we're going to be talking quite a bit about annuity today, Ron, what is an annuity?
Well, Jensen, an annuity basically is a contract, usually with an insurance company. There are other types, but typically with an insurance company where the buyer deposits either a lump sum or a series of payments in exchange for the insurer to guarantee them a payment stream of income in the future.
Oh, okay. So how does it work, actually?
Well, the way it works,
you have money, you put it in.
You can put in either a lump sum or you can have periodic payments to put into an annuity, depending on the type of annuity it is, okay? You may have a deferred annuity where you deposit a lump sum, as I say, or periodic payments, but you don't take a stream until later on. Or you may have what's called an immediate annuity, where you deposit a lump sum in and you take money immediately for your lifetime, for 20 years, 10 years, however you choose. So basically it is a vehicle to deposit monies, and then you allow the insurance company to pay you later on as time goes on. One thing
I was just going to say, in some ways, it's kind of like a bank account with an insurance company, whereby you deposit money, and I suppose, does it grow tax deferred, or how's the tax situation on it?
Yeah, it does. Going back to what you said, like a bank account, with a bank account, typically you're going in and out of that like a revolving door, basically. You put money in, but you may pull money out. You put money in again, pull money out. Whereas an annuity, you may not do it that way because there are what's called surrender penalties in there, and I'll talk about that a little later. But, it grows typically tax-deferred. And when you start taking distribution is when you pay taxes on your monies, depending on the type of annuity it is. Now, when you say tax deferred, typically individuals have a 401k or maybe a 403b, depending on the industry they're in. And they're putting monies in there. And typically these are large annuities. So we have what's called tax qualified money and we have non-qualified money. So qualified money is pre-tax. So basically, when the money is going in, it's going in on a pre-tax basis. In other words, when one is depositing it, you're not paying taxes on it yet. So it accumulates tax deferred, but when you take the distribution, you then pay taxes on that money. Now, an after-tax dollar goes in, it accumulates, and it would seem that depending on the structure of it, be it a traditional type plan or a Roth. In the Roth situation, you're putting an after-tax dollar in. It is accumulating inside tax deferred. However, when you take the distribution, you take it on a tax-free basis. There's other plans that are non-qualified where you put the money in. You're just putting it in. It's not under a Roth-type plan. And in doing that, it's still non-qualified. It may be an inheritance you received, and you put that lump sum in, and you want it just to grow. But when you take distribution, you do have, you've earned interest on that money. You're not paying on the principal, but you're paying on the interest that you've earned on that money, and you will pay taxes on that. Can I add one more thing that I didn't add earlier?
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to offer this disclaimer. I'm not a tax professional, so I'm not offering tax advice. Also, I'm speaking kind of in general, offering information. I'm not giving personal advice, as I don't know one's personal situation or financial position. So this is basically for information for individuals who are listening today, and certainly if there's questions, I'd be more than happy to answer those once we get to that point. Okay?
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ron. We certainly don't want to do anything or say anything that's going to be construed as advice to an individual. So thank you for that.
Right.
Certainly. Because all situations are different.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, so we got a little bit, well, quite a bit more to talk about annuities, but I would like if you would refine a little bit about the qualified money versus non-qualified money. I know you touched on that, but if you would just elaborate on that a little bit more for us. Qualified,
sure.
What is qualified, what is unqualified? Because, you know, it sounds like, hey, I think all money should be qualified.
Well, all money should be qualified. I hear you. I hear you there. Well, basically, an example, an individual is working in the private sector and their employer has a 401k plan that they offer to the employees. They may match it, they may not, you know, but the individual is able to put X amount of dollars into the plan, okay? And in fact, let me just hit on that while we're there. The IRS allows an individual this year, 2021, to put $19,500 into their plan. If they're over 50 years old, they can add an additional $6,500 to their plan. If there's matches, of course, the employer can match what's going in depending on the percentage they're matching. But the money that they're putting into the plan, the employer is taking it out on a pre-tax basis as long as it is a traditional 401k, okay? You heard me mention Roth earlier, but we're talking qualified right now. So that money is going in pre-tax. So in other words, we haven't paid taxes on that money. And what it does is it reduces our taxable obligation. They would have to consult their tax, you know, person, but it reduces our taxable obligation to the extent of the amount that we're putting in the plan. So in other words, for the year, if we put $6,000 in, we had put $500 a month into the plan, well then with that, my gross income will then become an adjusted gross and subtract $6,000 from that gross amount, basically. So that is qualified money, pre-tax money. Now, anything that goes in on an after-tax basis, which would be something like a Roth 401. They have those out there now, or they have the Roth 403B, which is in the 403B is in like the hospitals, the school system, the churches, religious organizations or nonprofit organizations, and some municipalities have the 403B. Well, both of those, the 403B is the cousin to the 401K, basically. But with that, a Roth 403B or Roth 401K is an after-tax dollar that goes in. So in other words, you pay taxes on your money and then you make your contribution to the plan through your employer. Both of these are employer-directed plans that we've just spoken of. So you're putting monies in there and the money is growing on a tax-deferred or a tax-free basis. It's growing in there, but when you pull it out, as long as it's been open a minimum of five years, and you're prior to 59 and a half, what happens there, when you pull the money out, you pull it out on a tax-free basis. And so you don't have to pay taxes anymore because you've paid taxes in putting the money in, and secondarily, they allow it to grow on a tax-free basis. So qualified, non-qualified again. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm getting what you're saying. With the pre-tax money, you put it in, and it's tax deductible. You get a chance to reduce your taxable income by the amount that you put in.
That is
and
correct.
And then the after tax, it's already taxed, so you don't really take a deduction for that. But when you take it out, that's when you pay tax on it. Am I correct?
Well, no, you're not going to pay tax on it if it is in a Roth-type environment. Let's say an after-tax dollar, however, you receive that inheritance, okay, and you take that money and put it into an annuity, let's say, okay? And so it's going to grow, and you're not going to pay any taxes on the growth right now. It's just going to grow. But 20 years down the road, you decide to start taking distribution now. When I say distribution, that means you're taking an income off of it, an income stream. So when you take that amount that you take, the principal is not going to be taxed, but the interest you've earned is going to be taxed. So depending on the amount you take, at your ordinary tax rate, they're going to tax the interest that you've earned. They're not going to tax the principal because the principal has just been put in there. But the interest you've earned over that period of time, based on the amount you've taken out, take out $1,000, let's say, well, that $1,000, whatever that interest was on that amount, they're going to take it. It's kind of like your paycheck, basically.
Oh, okay.
They're going to take taxes out of that paycheck. Mm-hmm. So federal and state.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we talked about a little bit about what type of annuities are available. You mentioned deferred annuities, immediate annuities. So the deferred annuities is money that you're putting in, and you don't want to touch that money right now. You want to leave it in there, maybe to your retirement or whatever. Then you want to start supplementing your retirement income with a deferred annuity, and that's just one scenario. But then the immediate annuity, what about the immediate annuity?
Well, the immediate annuity is, again, a lump sum. Some people would prefer, just considering where they had worked and they're looking at that 401, for instance, they may take the whole thing out and roll it over into an immediate annuity. And I use the term roll it over because if they took the lump sum out and just sat on it trying to figure out what they're going to do and over 60 days elapses, they're going to be taxed on that money. So they use the term roll over, and they'll roll it over into another plan. So they may have an annuity that they set up to roll that money into. So the it becomes a repository, so it receives the money. Now, the immediate, they put it in there, but they trust the insurance company because they're pretty strong. All the insurance companies many are very strong, possibly stronger than where they worked. So they have more guarantees that their money will be safe here, and they draw an income off of that. They're paid a certain percentage for the term that they decide to choose the money for. They may take it for 20 years. They may take it for 10 years. They may take it for a lifetime. But they take it immediately. They don't let it sit like the deferred. It's an immediate annuity. And it pays them a certain percentage based on the term.
They start getting that monthly income immediately. Ron, I see we have a couple of people. Oh, let me just say that I have on the show today Ron Gilmore, who is a pension consultant. He's out of Sacramento, California area. Today we're talking mainly about annuities. So thank everybody for calling in. And if you're just calling in, I apologize about last week. The show went down, but I see some of y'all stuck with us and called back this week. So let me ask the first caller that pressed. Oh, if you have a question or comment, press the number 1 on your phone. I see a caller, 4600. 4600,
well,
you state your name and where you
call. It's Pianchi calling from the Midwest or the Delta. You know, the topic on the annuity is a good one. And you made mention about in the past how companies and people and their employees, when they retired, they had pensions. My industry was that of commercial construction. And my employees had not only the pensions that they paid into, but also an annuity. And some of those individuals would accumulate over a couple hundred thousand dollars in their annuity, which is good. And they would retire. They would retire on a pension that paid, in some cases, more than what they was working when they worked. Now, I know that that's far and few between nowadays, but it does exist. But I was going to ask you this. I hear what the Treasury Secretary is contemplating taxing unrealized gains. And I wonder what your opinion would be on that, because that would be detrimental, because in not only your pension, but in your annuity, they're using that rule of 72, where that interest goes right back in to becoming a larger principal, thus by achieving a larger gain. So would that not be detrimental to tax unrealized gain before you even put your hands on it? Even in stock, you hold a stock and that stock goes up $10. Well, they want to tax that $10, even though you have not even claimed that stock. It's still there in the account. What's your opinion, sir?
Well, my opinion is my opinion, of course. I'm not a tax professional, but I would say that, and this is nothing new. They've talked about this, you know, for a period of time. They're always looking to grab extra monies that's out there. But taxing that, I think, would be detrimental, because you're losing the it's like the snowball. You know, the snowball going down the hill, it gets larger and larger and larger as time goes on. You mentioned that people put money away. They had a couple $100,000 that they had saved in their annuity alone. Well, the compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. And if they start taxing it, they'll break into that compound interest. And the growth over that period of time will not be realized, as if that money stayed there and then they get their taxes when the individual takes distribution. My opinion, I don't think it's a good idea. They're looking for monies. They're just looking for monies.
Okay, I see we have another caller. Let's see. Caller 7473, would you state your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Malcolm Hughes. I'm calling from outside of Atlanta, Georgia. I wanted to get your opinion on this strategy that I'm using with a solo 401k, which is kind of a Roth for individual self-employed individuals, and this strategy works best is what I'm hoping. I'm paying tax on all of my income, and I'm funding my solo 401k. And I'm expecting to grow that 401k substantially because I'm investing in real estate through a self-directed 401k. And so when I'm expecting to pull that money out tax-free, regardless of how much it has grown, is that a sound strategy in your opinion, sir?
Well, it's a good question there. Again, your tax professional knows what's going on with you personally and what your obligations are, what your income levels are, and things of that nature. But certainly as a self-employed individual, a self-directed 401 is always a good option to put monies in and to allow your money to accumulate. Now, you mentioned you had real estate in yours that you're investing in, and there's many options there as well. But nevertheless, looking at that, that's an excellent way to do it because it gives you have higher limitations there.
And well, the main thing is I'm thinking when I pull my money out, it's going to come out tax free. That's the main, and I'm funding that thing to as much as I can every time I can, because I know I can grow it substantially. And then the other thing is, and this strategy works for self-employed individuals, I expect my income to keep going up and up and up. And so I'm not looking for the deferred tax as far as the eliminated tax, I guess is what I want to call it. And but that's what I'm looking at, to eliminate tax in my old age as I have, say, residual income coming in, and not expecting my income to go down, put me in a lower tax bracket, I think, which is what the 401ks do. What the strategy was that in your older age you have less income, so the tax would be less. But I'm expecting mine to grow, as I say, and I'm expecting to pull it all out tax-free because I paid taxes on it up front.
Up front, good for you. Well, yeah, I mean, that was the theory years ago, because when we would plan for individuals years ago, we would plan that they would be in a lower tax bracket. But as we've seen, as time has gone on and as incomes have increased, people oftentimes leave work in a higher tax bracket. And so the planning that we did years ago really didn't work like it should have worked. So now the advent of the Roth and other ways of putting monies away has given people a tax-free income, which has helped them there. And those others that came that still had taxes, there are other ways to reduce their taxes. So that worked out very well, or that works well. And the strategy you're doing, keep it up.
Well, hopefully you'll share some other ideas to reduce taxes. That's all I have to say. I'm gone.
Well, okay.
I can come back, but that's my main focus is to eliminate taxes. And so any strategies that you have to reduce or eliminate taxes, hopefully it'll be a part of your presentation today.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. We'll try to make sure we hit that.
Right, right. Well, since we're on that subject, Ron, if you can share any other tips with how people can eliminate taxes, go right ahead.
Well, there's a number of ways for individuals to do that. First, being debt-free helps out because it gives you more money to work with. Now, on certain type plans, there's limitations because annuities, like let's say you're driving a BMW, you have the frame of the car, that you're driving, but inside you have the engine. Well, the engine in an annuity can be a number of different things. You know, it can be just straight stock. It can be mutual funds. It can be monies that's deposited in there just into a fixed. I didn't even mention the fixed interest annuity. That's one where you have a fixed interest rate for the period of time, the accumulation period, fixed. And that's a nice thing. We were talking about compound interest earlier. You have a fixed index annuity, which is a plan that allows individuals to be in accumulating money, but they're not in the market like they are in a variable annuity where they're in the market and you have the ups and downs of the market. Whereas at an index, you don't lose money. Let me put it that way. You have guarantees where your principal is safe and the interest you earn is safe, and you don't lose it once you've earned it. Now, in regards to options for individuals, if they're just looking to reduce in upfront because they have a higher income and they're getting eaten alive by Uncle Sam, well, you want to max fund your plans as much as you can. Remember that the IRS allows you to put in for 2021, it was $19,500. For 2022, it's $20,500. And that's only, normally they go at $500 a year. But this year, because they didn't go up during pandemic in 2020, they went up 1,000. So 20,500 plus catch up, you can put another 6,500 in, and that gives you about 27,000 you can put away, and that doesn't take into consideration the monies that's going in from your employer. This can, again, reduce your taxable income that's up front that we're talking about right now. For those that are trying to find escapes from Uncle Sam and ways you can reduce monies. You also have the Roth IRA. You have a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA. That gives you $6,000 that you can put in. Catch up, if you're over 50 again, is an additional $1,000. That gives you $7,000 you can put into that plan. Other individuals that are self-employed, you have that direct self-directed 401, like we mentioned. You have the SEP IRA, depending on employees, simple IRA, you have that as well. These are options that give higher limitations where monies can be put away. Now, I'll give you one other strategy that is available that creates tax-free income for individuals, providing it's handled correctly. This is the life insurance policy. It's a whole life insurance policy. And people say, insurance, why am I going to do that? Well, we're talking long-term growth. We're not talking growth over a year or 2 years. That's a whole different ballgame there. But when we're talking long-term growth, you're talking 20, 25, 30 years maybe. You're putting monies in on a systematic basis, and you're growing in there. You will have a lump sum of money that is sitting there. If you take that money out and you loan against yourself, that is a – certainly life insurance is supposed to be life insurance. But with this, an individual can withdraw money and pull that money out on a tax-free basis based on the laws today. So that is another option that is available for individuals who are trying to create tax-free income during their latter years. And certainly if you went and borrowed money from the bank, you're not going to pay taxes on that money. Now, if you borrow that money and put it in the bank and gain interest, you're going to pay tax on the interest, but not on that principal that you borrowed. So essentially, that's the same thing you do with your life insurance policy. After you have accumulated that lump sum, you start just taking monies out on your own. Now, you say, well, what happens to the face amount if something happens to me? Well, the insurance company, if you haven't paid yourself back, the insurance company will then just subtract that amount plus the interest and pay the difference to your beneficiary. Another thing about that is people use that becoming their own banker. So becoming their own banker, they then take the money out if they're buying a car, for instance, let's say. Rather than finance it, you just call the insurance company, get a check, pay cash, negotiate the amount of that car, because certainly with cash, it talks. And you don't have to worry about financing, and you can get a lower purchase price generally. Then what you do, instead of paying, you know, the bank or whoever, your credit union or whatever, you pay yourself back into your insurance policy. And you put your money back in there and just maintain the continuity of the policy inside. So that's a side note there, but these are ways to create monies so that you yet have that tax-free income, as long as it's handled properly. It's not a modified endowment contract or something like that. General terms. We're all speaking in general terms here. You know, we mentioned why an annuity. And again, it's been mentioned about pensions, and pensions are fewer and far between today. For those without a pension, it's an excellent vehicle to accumulate money and have a guaranteed stream of income for a period of time, be it, like we say, 10, 15, 20 years, or a lifetime. Certainly, if you take it for a lifetime, it's going to be a lesser amount than you get for 10 years or, say, 20 years. But it is yet a stream of income, and many people use it. And as it was mentioned earlier, those that have the pension and contributed to the annuity, they can let their pension run, and certainly with time, the purchasing power of the dollar, it decreases as time goes on, depending on the inflation rate. So let's say, you know, the inflation rate is 3% for 12 to 15 years down the road, that dollar is going to be worth half than it is today. So we can experience, we've experienced that with bread, with gas, with milk. You think about it and think of the cost when we were growing up and look at the cost today. So With that, people can trigger a stream of money. Some may have their Social Security still. That's a stream of money or a pot of income. They can turn it on when they're ready for it. And they turn it on, and money comes out the spigot there. So they can subsidize their income that way and have monies down the road to be able to live their life and have a maintain their income there. Are there any questions right now? Just been kind of rattling
okay,
on there.
Let's see. Does anyone have a question for Ron? Okay, so so Ron, as far as the benefits of an annuity, I know you touched on that, but if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, when we think of the benefits of annuity, you have safety, depending on the type of annuity. If it's a variable annuity and it's in the market, you're going to have the ups and downs of the market. You have no guarantees, so you don't have safety of principal nor interest earned because it's going to go up and down. You can lose it all. But the other type we've spoken of, you have safety, you have security. It'll pay an income for a specified period of time. It offers that type of pension income for individuals. And certainly it's always dependent on the financial position of the insurance company you're using or the claims-paying ability of that insurance company. And that is why you have individuals who search out insurance companies. Sometimes you hear advertisements and things of these high interest rates they're paying. Many insurance companies cannot sustain that, and we've seen that through the years, and we've seen in companies go under. And they come back with a new name, and they go under again, come back with a new name. They're offering these high rates but can't sustain it. So you want to look at the history of an insurance company and their claims-paying ability, their financial strength, so that you have a right company. And typically that's an A-plus, an A company that you're looking at so you can make sure that they're
right,
there
right.
when you're ready to take your money. The other benefit of a
what
annuity,
some of-
you can name it.
I'm sorry, go ahead. So go right ahead.
I was just going to say the other benefit of an annuity is that you can name a beneficiary. So if something happens to you, that money will be paid to your beneficiary. So that money is not lost, you know, altogether. There are some that, you know, if you didn't have a beneficiary, you don't have anywhere to leave your money. Well, certainly it'll go back to the fundraiser of the insurance company. But all in all, you can leave a beneficiary. You can even leave a charitable organization, your church. You can leave the zoological society or, you know, whatever you're into, a nonprofit organization, you can leave that money for that, too, as a charitable gift. And you get into the estate stuff there, which we're not going to talk about at this point.
Right. I know most of the time when you think of annuities, you think of someone putting a lump sum of money, like they have an old 401k or something like that, or they may have a relative that's passed on and left them a lump sum of money. However, I understand that there are annuities whereby if you just want to put in $100 a month or $500 a month or whatever, is that a possibility if I know some of the companies, they give you a little bonus. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yes, you can. Periodic payments, you can do that, whereas typically the insurance company has a minimum amount. Some are $50, some are $100. And these are the ones where it allows you to have a flexible premium, and you can put it in on a monthly basis. Let's say if it's tax qualified, they're going to take it out of your check each month. So you get paid every 2 weeks. You say $100 a month. They're going to take $50 out every 2 weeks and set it aside and submit it to the insurance company. Now, there are companies that will offer bonuses for those that are putting monies in. Let's say that 5%. They offer it for a period of time, so they give you immediate interest on that money you put in. So you can put that $100 when you get $5 on it, but still – that's better than nothing. And over time, that grows. Now, some have a period of time they do that. You know, it may be 8 years, let's say, or something like that. But they will do that for all the monies you put in there for that period of time. Now, we're not talking about compound interest. We're talking about a bonus on that contribution that goes in. And the benefit there, too, is if indeed you had monies to roll over, say you had another old 401k that's just hanging out there and it's been sitting out there for years, and you figure, well, I'll roll it into this. Well, if you did that, let's say it's, you know, $10,000 just sitting out there and it's growing, you roll it in, well, you get your 5% on that. And that's not a bad deal to get something like that. And you just roll it in and you get that extra amount right on top right away. So that is how that would work. And you can do, you can work your plans doing it on a periodic basis. If it's an after-tax dollar, you can do the same thing. It just comes out of your checking account that's going into the plan itself. Non-qualified.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So that's
yeah.
Interesting. If anyone has a question, press the number one on your phone. I see there's one person that has not asked a question yet. But so if you have a question, please feel free. This is the Council of Elders show. This is Saturday, October 30th, 2021. And our guest today is Ron Gilmore, who is a pension consultant. And today's main topic is annuities. There's a lot of things that we could focus on, but annuities happen to be one today. Now, Ron, I have a question. Maybe someone that's listening to this program right now is already retired. They're not working. You know, they've hung up the shoes to work, and but they may have monies that's not really doing them any good, sitting them in a bank or someplace. Would annuities be beneficiary for someone who is already retired?
Yes, definitely, depending on what their objective is, depending on their age, because they may want to take that and have the possibility of getting a better rate. If that money is just lazy money sitting there at the bank, certainly the rates in the banks right now are point minus. It's very low. So they can possibly get a better rate by putting it in. And I want to get into costs and surrenders and things like that in a second if I can. But it's considered non-qualified money. So one thing about non-qualified money is you have no limitations outside of the, at least by the IRS, outside of the annual limitations that the insurance company may impose themselves. They have certain limitations. You know, you can't put any more than $1 million into this plan, or, you know, so much per year, depending on what's going on. But you have unlimited amounts that you can put into the plans based on IRS. So they would open a non-qualified plan. Maybe they want to leave something for their family. They're not going to use it themselves, but they have this lazy money just sitting. They can put it into the plan and allow it to grow. And when something happens to them, they can have it paid to their beneficiary. They can have a secondary on there as their trust or whatever, and allow things to be carried out as they stipulate. So, yes, they can do that. Or if they've just retired and they have some money and they want to put something in there, they can do that too and still allow it to grow for 10, 15 years and then start drawing it. And like I say, with the purchasing power of the dollar reducing, that would increase income down the road for them. So they don't have to look at their pension and try to skimp and, well, we got to say we can't spend all this money. No, they can spend, and then they would be able to at least have a little freedom. And then they would have this money that they put into their annuity, and they have it down the road to take out later. So, yes,
right.
It could definitely work for them.
Go ahead, Ron.
I was going to make mention of the cost within an annuity. Depending on the type, usually there is a surrender cost in there, which is associated with an annuity. And, you know, the old ones, that's why so many people hated annuities years ago, because you could have 15 years, 18 years, 20 years of surrender period in there. And things have changed a little bit today. Typically, you may have 8 years, or some still have about 12 years. But the reason you have that there, first of all, is to discourage the revolving door like you have with a savings account. The annuity is set aside a financial accumulation vehicle over the period of time. So you want to extend that period of time and discourage people from taking money out. So they do that by putting the surrender costs on there. It could be, you know, if you took it early on, it can be 8% or 5% of the amount you have in there. You do it later, you know, 5-7 years down the road, it could be down to 2% and certainly 1% or whatever. But looking at that, that allows people to keep that money in there and say, okay, this is money I'm using for later, and the money is there. If there's money in like a variable annuity or something like that, or in mutual funds, stocks, whatever it is in there, what happens with that is there, you know, maintenance and expense charges there. There could be charges there from the mutual funds themselves that are associated inside the annuity. So you have those type things that exist. But annuities still are a safe place to put money, and your principal growth is safe within that annuity unless it's in the variable market.
Right, right. And they do make exceptions. You know, if you have an emergency, they do have, say if you have $100,000 in an annuity or whatever, 50 or whatever, and you have an emergency, I believe they do allow a certain amount to be taken out without a penalty. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm happy you brought that up. Most definitely they do. Many of them have within the first, well, after the first year, you can take 10% out of that amount that you have there without any problem, without triggering a surrender penalty. Now, even that 10% that comes out, though, if it's specially qualified money, IRS is going to be at your door. But if you need the money, you need the money, you know. If there's emergencies and some people take it out, you know, for final expenses or things of that nature for a loved one who hadn't prepared. So, you know, things do happen in life, and certainly they do. And there's other things now in view of all of the maladies we've had throughout the country, especially the, you know, floods or things of that nature that have happened. They've also been built in a new program or a plan to help people with these type of devastating events that occur in life. So, yes, they do have
right.
options for individuals.
Are you familiar with any annuities that can be used for long-term care?
Well, they have hybrid plans out there, yes, that people do use for that, and they have that piece there. They have riders on certain annuities that if an individual went into a care facility, they can access their monies, and they can use that for long-term care. Certainly, that isn't long-term care as noted like here in the state of California, but nevertheless, they can use that as long-term care monies and go ahead and, you know, access and pay whatever it costs for their daily rates there. So that is available.
Right, right, right.
And that's excellent, not only statements you made there, it's good to say that because people wonder, well, how about if I have this money put away? Indeed, they have that. Now, the person with the pension, certainly they have a lifetime income that can also assist them in taking care of their long-term care costs, as well as being able to access monies from their annuity that has that on there. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the
right.
ADLs are there, as we know.
Right. You spend quite a bit of time working with educators, teachers, and so forth, helping them plan their retirement with their life insurance. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And along with teachers, there are going to be other people like firemen, you know, teachers with the 403Bs, I believe public workers with the 403B. Can you tell us a little bit about your work in that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, I work with quite a few school employees, be they teachers, certificated or classified employees. work with individuals in the public employee retirement system, so STIRS and PERS here in California. And when we're doing that, we're certainly looking at their plan, because typically the plan is set up, depending on their structure, to pay them anywhere from 40 to 60% of their income. The average person is there about 20 years. So with that, those that work much longer, 30, 35, 40 years, those that just love their job and they're still there, certainly their income is going to be a lot higher percentage-wise. But the average is about 40 to 60%. So what we have to do is work with individuals, because the teachers, for instance, here that are on STIRS, State Teachers Retirement System, do not contribute to Social Security. So then they absolutely need a supplemental plan to assist them, and we write the annuity to assist them with that, and that's the 403B that's in the school system. And they will fund it, many max fund it, and just shove money in there so that they will have an additional pot. We'll talk to them about what the percentage is, you know, that to put in there in regards to replacing their Social Security. And with PERS, PERS
right.
have many, or the individuals have many programs in there. So depending, again, on their structure, but some have that 457 plan, which is a deferred comp plan that goes in when you mention firemen or certain peace officers and all, have that available, and they max fund that. And that's their extras there, because some of them are not contributing to Social Security either, depending on which ones they are. So, yes, it is important to work with them, as I do, and share information regarding their future. Many think that that pension is going to be there, and it's going to be, you know, everything they need until they find out how much it really pays to them, and they realize they need to be paying attention and not spending all their money, but putting monies away so that they will have something in the future, be it qualified or non-qualified, how they put it away. The fact of the matter is to have monies in the future. So we do work with individuals like that quite frequently.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Folks, we got a little over 8 minutes to go. If you have a question or comment, now is the time to ask, because, you know, we're winding down. Just for total transparency, Ron and I, we're working on a project right now, working with pastors and church congregations. I had heard of pastors here in the Sacramento, California area who had large congregations. However, with all the years that they worked, they were not planning for their retirement, so that when they retired, they were broke. Let's tell it like it is. After
Amen.
Years of pastoring, they hadn't planned for their financial futures, because pastoring is almost like, it's not really self-employment, but it's kind of similar. So, Ron, can you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, happy you brought that up as well. And like you mentioned, pastors, there's some, and many ministers have an option to opt out of Social Security, and often many do, so they'll have a higher income. But so they don't have that pot of money either. All they have is the, you know, monies they're receiving from the church. And many are dependent on, you know, tithe and offering coming in so that they can receive what they need. And so the structure is the 403B for the church, so the church can put monies away for the pastor, so the pastor, when the pastor retires, can have something that would be available and create a stream of income. Because certainly if there's a new pastor coming in, the church has to take care of the new pastor, and it's very hard. They find themselves hard-pressed to take care of the pastor emeritus. So that is available there. Also, there's plans called key person plans that are available for the pastor, so that if something happens to the pastor, the church will be taken care of. And, you know, executive bonus plans that are there for the pastor, so that the pastor's family will have a life insurance policy as well, so that there's something there. There's many ways to take care of that pastor in your churches, and certainly we're always available to consult with you and share information if you're interested in taking care of your pastor, if you're on the board or whatever, and want to do things for the pastor then, make sure the pastor is taken care of. The pastor labors very hard in sharing the word. The pastor is the one that gets up at 2 o'clock in the morning or receives the calls when somebody's in emergency, taking care of families, certainly handling the funerals. And many see the pastor on Sunday morning but doesn't realize what goes on behind the scene. So in actuality, when a pastor is being paid, they're basically underpaid as time goes on. And to have these extra benefits is wonderful, you know, for that pastor. And I say underpaid because of the hours and the excess hours that they spend, not considering, and it's a blessing to them, but not considering the time they spend in prayer for the congregations. So we really want to take care of our pastors and make sure that they are not only living well, but being taken care of for the future.
Right, right. And I, you know, for a long time, I didn't know that pastors could opt out of Social Security. I just thought everybody got into Social Security, but they can actually opt out of it.
That's correct.
You're saying?
Yes, they can.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, and also teachers here in California, I don't know about others, they don't get Social Security. They have their own system so that if they don't plan ahead, they're going to have a sharp income drop when they stop teaching. So it will be
well,
there to get into something.
Absolutely.
I got a question.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I really think that's deplorable that pastors and teachers is exempt from paying Social Security, whereas other people are. Well, you know, here's the thing: they should be. I think that they should pay into Social Security myself, and I think it was that way with postal workers too. But I think things changed.
Yeah,
in order that the in order that the program is viable, they have the input. It kind of reminded me of Obama. Care or the Affordable Health Act. If you weren't in on it, you was forced to pay a fine imposed by the IRS. And
well,
you know, just going to show how some things are just lopsided.
Well, it is, and the teachers are not necessarily opting out. What's happening is the system was set up for it to be their Social Security plan. Okay, through the state of California, so they didn't have the option to pay in. It was just set up like that where they're not paying in. So it's that's their situation now. And a minister can opt out. That's part of the IRS plan that is set up. But the teacher themselves, if they're in PERS, they do pay into Social Security because there are teachers that are PERS as well, not just. Well, we say STRS, State Teachers Retirement System. And teachers that have come in later in life, they have worked in the private sector maybe. They have Social Security also. They pay it in during those years. But there are penalties, too, against that teacher. They're trying to. There's a bill, H.R. 82, that's in right now. And they're trying to remove this again so that the teachers do start paying in because many want to pay in. They want to pay in so that they can have the Social Security, number one, and number two, so that they're not penalized by having money in there already and being in STRS, a state teacher.
Well, you know, here's the thing, too. Now, the teacher's fund, you have districts, you have areas around the country where parents are opting for school choice with vouchers so they can put their child where they feel is best, and that money that would be allocated for their child if they sat in a traditional building would follow them wherever they go. I think that
right.
is the best way. That is the option that parents should have and be able to utilize if do so. Now, if you do that, just as you see in some other instances, like a charter, for instance, the school district's population are down thus by needing less teachers that's going to be paying into the teacher's fund. What's your opinion on that?
Well, and that's true. That's true. We're getting out the realm we were in, but indeed that is true, most definitely. So, I mean, when that happens, of course, there are less teachers paying in. I mean, you know, they pay a certain percentage depending on what's going on there.
20 seconds. We're going to have to wrap it up.
Ah, okay. Well, might have to say that another time because that can be a long conversation on that one.
Yeah, so I
certainly appreciate the opportunity
today. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ron.
No, thank you for the opportunity. That's all I want to say, and it's been a pleasure. God bless everyone here, and pray you have a wonderful Thanksgiving this next year.
All right. Well, let's see. I'm going to hang up, Ron, and call you right back.